What to do about big British banks?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects the United States. A government probe in Britain is looking at whether some of the country's biggest banks should be broken up. The Independent Banking Commission laid out some of its options in a report today. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us live from London with what it all means. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
Breaking up big banks. That seems like a radical idea. Is this really on the table there?
Oh, it's certainly on the table. I mean, as in the U.S., there's been a lot of concern here about these big universal banks, which have both risky investment banking activities and retail banking. If the risky business goes bad, that threatens millions of retail depositors, and so the bank has to be bailed out. But whether breaking up these big universal banks is likely to happen here in the U.K. is another question. Analyst Michael Prest thinks not, since the U.S. has already passed up on the chance to carry out the same reform.
The great bank breakup, which some people thought might happen, never occurred in the US. And therefore, it's unlikely, I think, to happen in the UK because there'd be enormous resistance in the City of London to running their banks in a completely different and potentially less profitable way from their competitors.
All right, Stephen. So if breaking up the big banks in the UK is not practical, what other reforms are we talking about?
A possible halfway house in which there's a firewall between the investment banking and the retail banking, so the retail arm is insulated. An absolutely key aim of this commission is to ensure that if things do go wrong in a big way again, it's the bank's shareholders and creditors that pick up the entire tab, not the taxpayers.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard reporting from London. Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Rising world food prices are the topic of an emergency UN meeting being held today in Rome. The aim is to restore stability in food markets and avoid riots, the BBC's Duncan Kennedy reports.
Russian harvests hit by drought, flooding in Pakistan and China, water shortages in Brazil. All big food-producing nations and all facing problems. And that means prices are going up. Take the cost of buckwheat in Russia, for example. It's risen by 11% this month alone. Elsewhere, meat and sugar prices have hit a 20-year high. There have already been riots in Mozambique over the price rises. Rob Subaraman from Nomura Bank says there'll be more rises in food prices as people get better off.
In these developing economies, there's a growing appetite to have higher calorie intake, wanting more meat, more fruit, more milk. And these things are very important.
The organisers of today's summit intend to share information and coordinate strategies to avoid a repeat of what happened 3 years ago, when there were riots in a number of countries as cereal and other prices soared. In Rome, I'm the BBC's Duncan Kennedy for Marketplace.
World markets are mostly lower. Reaction mainly to a disappointing U.S. jobless claims report from yesterday. Wall Street's reaction, not so good either. The Dow on Thursday fell 76 points. It closed at 10,662.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constant Contact Email Marketing, providing small businesses and nonprofits with personal coaches to help them succeed. ConstantContact.com. By the new Rosetta Stone, introducing their latest advancement in language learning, version 4 Totali. Information at rosettastone.com/APM. And by MassMutual, offering retirement and 401k plans to businesses for more than 60 years. MassMutual.com/retirestrong.
The St. Louis Arch is set to get a little facelift. A design jury has been awarded the contract to a New York firm, and they're being asked to transform the Arch into a world-class tourist destination. From Station KWMU, Adam Allington reports.
When you talk about the Arch, several things come up. First of all, it's breathtaking. Seriously, if you've never seen it up close, it's much taller than you'd think. A close second is, how do I get there?
You can see the Arch. You're right beside the Arch, but now what do you do? There's no parking down through here, so it's difficult, not very well guided.
Bob Forrester's in town from Indiana. He said he drove by the Arch several times before finally finding the right exit. Ludwig Goppenhammer and his wife are from Colorado. They had yet another logistical problem.
I cannot find a bike rack anywhere, and there's even a bike trail down there. Yeah, I would think it would be a no-brainer. People would ride by and park by the Arch.
But the larger issue that St. Louis is wrestling with is how to connect Eero Saarinen's iconic masterpiece to the rest of the city. For instance, if someone wants to walk the four blocks from the Arch to Busch Stadium, they first have to cross over or under a very noisy Interstate 70. Michael Allen is a consultant with the St. Louis-based Preservation Research Office. He says fixing these outdated infrastructure issues is a growth business among architects and planners, particularly in river towns.
Every city that attempted urban renewal on the riverfront ended up with a large park and a giant interstate between the downtown core and that park. Louisville, Philadelphia, Cincinnati.
The consensus seems to be that I-70 will remain for now. However, Michael Van Valkenburg Associates, the landscape architect in charge of the project, does include plans for roofing over part of the freeway with a kind of green space lid. Other ideas for the 91 riverfront acres include a beer garden, an ice skating rink, and a bird sanctuary. St. Louis Mayor Francis Slay says the project has the potential to add millions to the regional economy.
As mayor, this is my number one economic development project. This is our top priority because it's more than just about the city. This is about the entire region.
The price tag for the project is still a moving target, though it's not expected to be cheap. Chicago's much smaller Millennium Park, completed in 2004, cost that city nearly $500 million. In St. Louis, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
See the winning design, by the way, at marketplace.org. And finally, a week's worth of business news in a Marketplace Minute. Here's Bill Radke.
The people who have the profession of declaring we're out of recession waited more than a year to sound the all clear. Tinker's dam, is that the expression? Blockbuster's finally going bust. After years of eating Netflix dust, they acknowledge their business model was wrong. Let's charge them a late fee for waiting so long. The FDA has begun to examine the worth of genetically modified salmon. Is it a cynical industry scam and a threat or a way to alleviate famine? And Colin Powell says, let's not grouse about illegal workers. They fix my house. I mean, houses of people other than me. That story is at marketplace.org.
Marketplace is Bill Radke in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.